parenting has been complicated by the fact he lived in Sacramento for a few years for work. Then there was a brief marriage to a woman with children, and that didn't always go well. But on the upside, he's never missed a birthday or holiday, and when she plays soccer and basketball, he makes almost every game, even when he had to come over from Sacramento. Tell me about you, Adam. How can you be single? You're such a catch. Surely there have been girlfriends. If you want to know if I dated, the answer is yes. I even had a couple of near misses, relationships that lasted a couple of years. And yet you didn't marry? You, such a family man? Why? I don't know. It just didn't feel right. I wasn't in love enough, I guess. I wish I'd thought of that, she said. But you loved him, Emmy, he said. From the way you described him, he walked on water. I loved him, she admitted, growing serious. She put down her fork. I was 24 when I met him. He proposed almost immediately. I realized much later I was handpicked. He was looking for an idiot who could pull off the millionaire wife image, from haute couture to decorating to entertaining to social grace under pressure. And of course, I had to be able to take orders. She finished her glass of wine. I'd like to tell you something. But then she stopped.
Another glass of wine? He prompted.
I think I'd like a cup of tea. When the waitress comes back, I'll ask her. But I wanted to say something. I might have misled you. About investigating Richard so I'd know how I ended up in this place. I've already read everything, Adam. If there's anything new, I don't need to know about it. For over 3 years, I was completely addicted to the news. I was glued to everything that floated across the internet. The books and biographical pieces started turning up long before he even went to trial. I read every court transcript, although I was usually there in the courtroom. I had my own lawyers. For a long time, they were the only people who talked to me. It didn't take long before all the things I suspected proved logical. Richard had strong sociopathic tendencies. As far as I know, he didn't murder the neighborhood pets, but according to old classmates, he lied and cheated his way through school. He used people. He enjoyed getting away with things. He liked deceit and winning by any means, and he had no empathy. The state and the feds might have been able to prove his fraud and theft, but there was only conjecture about most of the other things. The things having to do with his ethics, his personality disorder. It all became so clear before his trial was over.
Emmy,
he said sympathetically, touching one of her hands. I didn't know. Yet I did know, Adam. I lived under the same roof with the man after all. Even though we weren't close, even though I can't say we had a loving marriage, I lived in his house. I traveled with him. The first time I suspected there was a mistress, we'd only been married a year. He smiled indulgently, kissed my forehead, and said, "Why in the world would I have a mistress? I have you. The most beautiful woman in New York City." I bought it, of course. He was so confident and convincing. But there came a time I just knew something was off. I overheard things. He had employees, and they were well aware of what he was doing, feeding his business from the bottom, paying out dividends here and there when it would bring in more capital. He referred to it as seeding, seed money. Satisfied clients brought in more clients. We never discussed it. But after we'd been married a few years, I heard things like that when he was talking to someone who worked for him or when he was on the phone with a client. I heard him moving money around to offshore accounts. He thought I was an idiot, at least about financial matters. I never really knew anything, but I strongly suspected that my slick and sleazy husband would stop at nothing to make big money. And I came to know about the mistress. Andrea Darius. I met her for the first time before we were married. Beautiful woman. So beautiful. Smart,
Classy, very high society type. She looked kind of like Katherine Heigl, that stately, confident, above-it-all look. I'd suspected from the first time I met her. There was something in the way she looked at him. It was just there. She was an image consultant, a public relations expert who specialized in the financial sector. Lenders and investors are constantly scrutinized, especially private companies and hedge fund managers. But that was just a front. That was one of the first issues I faced when I looked the other way. I made excuses to make my existence more acceptable in my own eyes. She laughed hollowly. While I'm a leper in Manhattan, Andrea is still a prominent figure in New York society. There's been speculation that she's a high-priced prostitute or even madam. Who knows? Who cares? The waitress came to their table, picked up some plates, and took their beverage orders. Adam really wanted another drink, but he asked for a coffee. See, I didn't have any proof of any kind, but things he said and did made me wonder why I didn't understand him better. Then one day, I realized I was married to a man I didn't know, a man who had no conscience. But by then it was too late.
Why didn't you testify against him?
Adam asked. She shook her head. When her tea came, she added milk and sugar and stirred slowly. I really wanted the whole thing to just go away so I could make my escape, which I fully intended to do. I have no real defense. But it is true that any testimony I might have given wouldn't do any good for the defense or the prosecution. It was suspicion, hearsay, speculation, nothing really.
You were trying to have a baby with him?
She winced. It was unmistakable. It was madness. I don't know what I was thinking. We hadn't been married that long, a couple of years, and I was still so young, but I knew something wasn't quite right in our marriage. I thought I could fix it. I thought we could be a family and he would become more conscious of me. She shook her head. How stupid was I? Anyone knows that babies don't fix things, and God knows nothing was going to cure what he had. It's a blessing I couldn't get pregnant. I finally realized what a catastrophic mistake that would be. So you see, Adam, it's not necessary for me to gather up all the things written about Richard and the case against him, or me. I'm up to speed on all that. I very rarely watch the news now. And those bios? She shook her head. I don't know if they're half true, but they sound suspiciously as if they could be.
I'm so sorry, Emmy, he said.
I haven't really talked about this. I can trust Lyle, and I dumped on him a little bit while I was going through it, but I didn't want to make his relationship with Ethan tense. Ethan thinks very little of me as it is.
But Lyle,
the best, she said immediately. So loyal, so wonderful, and always there for me. And believe me, I put him through some drama. She sipped her tea. I'm so grateful for Lucinda Lopez, who I've seen twice now. She's perfect. She makes telling it all so easy. And every once in a while, she leads me to a perfect conclusion that explains everything, that makes me understand. Men like Richard Compton have a gift for finding the right sucker. He needed a girl who'd lost her parents, who had nowhere to go, who wanted someone who could make her think she was a fairy princess, someone who wouldn't question his motives. And that was me to the core. Adam, I want you to know who you've gotten yourself mixed up with. He frowned.
You think I didn't know most of that? I didn't know how you coped, but I found out all that stuff. His scheme, his mistress, his lack of conscience, all the speculation from old acquaintances that he'd always been sociopathic. He was so narcissistic, it's odd he killed himself.
People think there's money hidden somewhere, she said. I certainly don't know of any, and I don't have any. I think his suicide was part revenge and part gotcha. He didn't have much value for life now, did he? Not even his own.
In the end, you were sure your conclusions about him were right?
Adam asked.
Oh, yes, she said.
During our marriage, through the investigation, through all the depositions, he was one cool dude and we didn't discuss any of it.
But in the end, when he'd been warned he was looking at anywhere from 40 to 75 years in prison, he let the floodgates open and did some incredible lashing out. He proved to me and anyone within earshot that he was a beast with no remorse.
She sighed. There are things I just can't repeat. They're so vulgar. They were quiet. She sipped her tea and he drank his coffee. The waitress silently refilled his cup and brought her more hot water, along with the check.
It's okay, Emmy, he said.
It's really not, Adam. You almost kissed me. You shouldn't do that. I'm damaged. I still can't believe what I allowed myself to be sucked into.
You were 24, and you were a great deal wiser by the time you were 30. Give yourself a break.
Rosemary always said, it's just as easy to fall in love with a rich man as a poor man. She was full of sayings. After Richard's death, leaving me holding the mess of his crimes, leaving me the suspect, you know what my darling stepmother said? If you marry for money, you'll earn every cent.
I never liked her,
Adam said. She's got some great sayings, though.
We're going to get through this, Emma,
he said. I wanted you to kiss me, she said. He had to work at keeping his heart from exploding. I wanted to be kissed, and the only person in the world I wanted to kiss me was you, she said. But Adam, you shouldn't, because I'm broken. I don't want to hurt anyone who gets close to me. We have to keep it friends. And Riley, listen, she was totally professional, but she made it pretty clear. She wouldn't like the idea of us being close.
You think I give a shit what Riley wants? He asked.
Well, I do. And you should. She's your family. I'm going to keep seeing the counselor for a little while. Maybe she's got a shortcut or two. I've got a few good years left, and I'd like to live them happily. He smiled.
A few good years? She was all of 34. She probably felt like she'd wasted a lifetime already. We'll get through this, Em. You're starting a whole new life on Monday. Cleaning toilets and mopping floors. Wowzer.
I'm going to make Riley proud of me, she said.
Don't tell her I said that. I don't tell anyone anything.
Emma didn't necessarily feel better about laying all that on Adam, but she felt cleaner, more honest. He should know. She might not have been complicit in Richard's crimes, but she was certainly a participant in ending up right where she was. She fell for every little trick he had, and before it was all over, he made sure she knew it. Snatches of their dialogue in the final weeks might echo forever, never leave her, might never give her peace. Adam reached across the small table and held her hand.
One thing you're not going to do, you're not going to worry about taking care of me. I don't need you to protect me, all right?
She knew he was strong. She knew he was smart. But was he wise to what association with a man like Richard had done to her? I'm not innocent anymore, Adam.
Not guilty either. And you're a survivor. I know you are.
Really? She asked. Is that so? He chuckled, but not with humor.
Your father's death? Rosemary? God, a few years of her would damage anyone. You pulled yourself together after Jock, picked up what you could carry, and went to New York, one of the biggest, scariest cities in the country.
He drank the last of his coffee.
I guess now I'll never see it.
Why is that?
No way you're going back there,
he said.
And I'm not going back there without you.
He briefly looked at their check. I'm afraid you're already getting in over your head. He laughed and pulled out his wallet. Let's at least split the check, she said.
Forget it. I'm not in over my head, Emmy. You don't scare me at all, and you've been through a lot. But I know people who have been through worse. Hell, I know people who have served in combat several times. They have issues just like you, and they're working on them. It's very tough, too.
She was feeling a little desperate. He was clearly forging ahead, not taking seriously how bad she might be for him. And she wasn't going to be able to hold him back. She adored him for wanting her still. And she feared for him. When I asked him why he'd kept a mistress, he said he needed someone to fuck that he could talk to.
It's hard to believe how pathetic he was,
Adam said, peeling off bills to put with the check.
The dumb shit,
he added, shaking his head. I accused him of being a common thief, and he slapped me and told me there was nothing common about what he'd done.
He hit you?
He asked, his green eyes darkening dangerously. Just the once, she said more quietly.
I kinda want to dig him up and beat the shit out of him. But dead is dead. I bet he didn't get away with anything this time. I may not go to church much anymore, but I still believe there's a heaven and a hell.
He put his wallet away.
About ready, Emma?
Yeah, she said. Sure. Walking to the car, his hand on the small of her back, she gave it one more try. Adam, you heard me, right? I'm coming out of a really dysfunctional situation. Beyond dysfunctional. Sick. Really sick. And it could follow me for quite a while. You don't want to be too close if... He stopped walking when they were almost to the car. He put his hands on her waist and looked into her eyes.
Emma, I've been waiting for you to come back for 16 years. I'm not gonna run scared now, just because some insane asshole did his best to leave you wounded. I told you, we can get through this.
He leaned toward her and gave her lips a sweet kiss.
You don't have to warn me anymore. You didn't have to warn me in the first place. Now I'm going to take you home. And if there's a God, you're going to invite me in.
I worry about the concept of us, she said. I don't want you to be collateral damage when the detritus of Richard's crimes sprinkles down on me.
I understand completely,
he said.
Finish now?
Don't be a fool, she said.
I won't.
All the way home from the restaurant, he talked to her softly of casual things, of the beauty of Napa, the way the cold drizzle of a Sonoma County winter had always made him crave soups and fires. She didn't have a fireplace, of course, but he did. He was looking forward to showing off his house. It was over 50 years old in a quiet, tree-lined neighborhood, and he'd enjoyed renovating it. He'd done most of the work himself, tearing up old carpet and installing hardwood floors, texturing and painting walls.
I focused on the four most important rooms, living room, kitchen, master, and bath. The new kitchen is so beautiful, it almost makes me want to cook.
Don't be hasty, she said. He was seducing her with ordinary things, as if he knew how starved she'd been for a reality she understood. Soups and fires, rainy days in a home that hugged her, the love of a good man. After their lunch, they went to her house. He held her hand the entire drive, and when she let him into her little bungalow, he glanced around and said,
You've been busy.
Just a little settling in, she said.
Come here,
he said, locking her door behind them and pulling her into his arms. His lips came down on hers with an urgency and hunger she hadn't been prepared for. After one brief moment of surprise, she matched his passion with a surging need of her own. It wasn't just her need for intimacy because it had been so long, but her need for it to be him. Clothing was removed while they kissed. It seemed that it only took seconds for them to be in her bed, skin to skin, lips to lips. Emma hadn't felt the touch of loving hands in years. Adam's beautiful hands, his lips, his strong fingers did the one thing she didn't think possible. Took her away. Far away. She thought only of him, intoxicated by his scent, his taste, his body. He was thoroughly beautiful. He had long, strong legs, muscled arms and shoulders, a smooth, hairless chest. With his thick brown hair, expressive brows, emerald green eyes, and strong jaw, he should probably be sculpted and put on display. For this moment in time, he belonged only to her, and she to him. She inhaled his breath, licked her way into his mouth, opened for him, and welcomed him into her body. He was gentle and smooth, teasing her into a frenzy. He responded to her arousal with heat. Finally, taking her on a powerful ride that had her crying out his name as she came. And came. And came. He joined her, softly whispering her name, his large frame shuddering, his mouth at her neck, his big hands in her hair. She trembled with the aftershock of orgasm, and he chuckled, a deep rumble. He kissed her eyes, her ears, her chin, her lips. Her calm returned so slowly, he didn't leave her body, pushing into her softly again and again.
"Still worried about the concept of us?"
he whispered in her ear. "You drugged me," she accused. He pushed into her again.
"A little bit. Damn, woman. I knew we'd be great together, but I didn't have enough imagination to know how great."
They continued kissing, soft and deep and lovely. He moved inside her, filling her, rocking with her in a smooth, deep motion. It didn't take long before she was clutching at him, pushing against him, begging for more.
"I can't say no to you,"
he whispered.
"I have a feeling I'll never be able to say no to you. God, why would I even want to?"
"I didn't say no either, did I?"
"More it is,"
he whispered, pounding into her until they were both rising again, reaching for another mutual climax. The moment she started to clench and tremble around him, he went off like a rocket, a powerful blast that made her almost whimper in pleasure. And she finally collapsed under him. Again, he kissed her eyes, her cheeks, her lips, running his work-roughened hands all over her. They were quiet for a while as their breathing evened and their bodies began to cool. He reached down to pull the duvet over them. Rolling onto his side, he brought her with him, gently holding her against him.
"Are you going to stay inside me forever?" she asked.
"Would that be inconvenient?"
he asked.
"Because it really feels like exactly where I should be."
"Funny," she said. "Feels that way to me, too."
"Friendship with you has perks,"
he said. She was quiet for a moment.
"Good,"
she finally said. He laughed.
"I don't want to be friends, Emmy."
"You don't?"
"Of course not. I don't share that with friends. There was nothing casual about that, and you know it."
"Oh?"
"Wasn't a friendly fuck for you either,"
he said.
"That was some of the finest love I've ever made. Might be the absolute best ever."
You think?
I know,
he said.
She smiled.
I'm glad to hear that, even though it was probably not a good idea.
He raised up, looking down at her. I think it was the best idea I ever had.
She couldn't keep from touching him, tenderly running her fingertips over the planes of his face.
I guess you're not going to come to your senses anytime soon. He shook his head.
He gently brushed her hair back from her face.
You know how I feel. I think you've always known. Do you think you can talk me out of it?
Well, I thought I could.
You can't.
She bit her lip and just looked into those fierce green eyes.
She sighed.
Thank God, she said. He smiled at her. Could be problematic that I just slept with my new boss's brother.
None of Riley's business who I sleep with. None of her business who you sleep with, for that matter.
Do you think she'll agree with that?
Do you think I care?
He asked, raising a brow in question.
Come on,
he said, pulling her closer so she was nuzzling into his chest.
Enjoy the moment. You'll have plenty of time to worry later.
She let herself be cuddled. I do feel considerably more relaxed than I did a couple of hours ago.
There you go,
he said with a laugh.
God knows I do.
After a few minutes of silence, he asked,
You going to sleep?
No. I'm afraid I'll wake up and find out it was just a dream.
He kissed her forehead. Nothing like that's going to happen. The bad dreams are over. The good dreams are just beginning.
The rest of the weekend was ideal, the kind of perfect Emma had given up on. After lying around in bed for a couple of hours, Emma showered and primped. When she came out of her bathroom, Adam was puttering comfortably around her little kitchen, making tea and checking out the refrigerator, taking inventory. He wore his jeans, his shirt hanging open over that gorgeous chest, socks on his shoeless feet. He looked so delicious like that, she wanted to take a bite out of him.
If you want to go out for dinner, I'll take you out,
he said.
If I can talk you into staying in, I'll go get us something.
You want to stay in? He grinned at her.
Oh, yeah.
Then his phone rang. He pulled it out of his pocket, looked at the ID, and picked up.
Hi, Mom.
He listened for a little while, nodding as though his mother might hear it.
You need me to fix that now?
A pause.
You did? I wish you wouldn't do that. I know it was irritating, but what if you fell? All right, I didn't mean to offend you, but really, don't do it again, all right? Well, thanks, but I'm actually going out tonight, so tomorrow I'll have errands and have to get ready for school. Nothing too exciting.
He winked at Emma.
Just having a glass of wine with a lady friend. I don't think so, which is how I'd like to keep it for now. Listen, if you need me to help with those Christmas decorations, Jock is? Okay, I appreciate the pass, and I'll get the lights up after school one day this week. So no ladders. Talk to you tomorrow? Great.
He put the phone back in his pocket.
Her smoke alarm was beeping because the battery was dead, and she climbed up on a stepladder in the stairwell and changed the battery. She's perfectly capable, but I hate thinking of her up on a ladder. That's what I'm for.
He made a face.
I change them regularly to keep her off the ladder.
You mentioned Jock?
He's pulling out the big boxes for Maddie and Mom. Maddie must have asked him. Gives them a chance to hang out for a while.
She shook her head. She asked who you were going out with.
She just asked, do I know her?
His smile was devilish.
I'm gonna get a shower before I go shopping.
Adam, they can't know, she said. I'm sorry, but Riley can't know.
I wasn't planning to tell her.
He said.
But I wasn't planning to keep it a secret either.
He frowned.
Is that your plan?
She bit her lower lip as she nodded. Until she decides it's okay, I'm back. Until I prove to her I'm an asset as an employee. Please, let's keep it between us.
You're afraid she'll be angry,
he said. Of course. She isn't too sure of me yet. She was very clear. Giving me a job had nothing to do with making up or being friends. She isn't ready for me in her life. You are a huge part of her life.
Do you want to stop this right now? Me and you? Because I can leave. I wouldn't like it, but if you need more time...
I can let you go, but heaven help me, I don't want to give you up. Not if you want to stay. Not even for Riley. She smiled a bit tremulously. You should really think about this. He smiled at her.
I'm going to take a shower, go to the store, and stay as long as you'll let me. And if it's important to you that we keep it from Riley for a while, I can do that. I want you to feel safe.
Thank you. I just need a little time to settle into my job. Not only do I need the job, I also want to prove to Riley that I don't expect any favors, that there's no debt to settle.
If that's the way you feel.
It is.
Then that's how it'll be,
he said. Can I go shopping with you? He smiled at that.
So you're not hiding us from the world, just from Riley. Just for now.
That's about right. Can you live with that?
It's okay, Emma. I know the ground still feels pretty shaky, but I think everything is gonna be okay.
She hoped so, but she knew things would only become more difficult if Riley and Adam were pitted against each other because of her, and that would be terrible. An hour later, they were back at home with potato cheese soup, mini ham sandwiches, and antipasto from the deli, plus a nice bottle of wine. They ate on the couch in front of the TV, then curled around each other for a while before going to bed. Adam didn't ask if he could stay. He just stayed as long as she didn't ask him to leave. She hung on to him all night long, as if lost at sea. And rather than try to shed her clinging arms, he held her firmly to him. In the morning, they had bagels and cream cheese with their coffee, and then went for a walk through the quiet town. Then back to Emma's place for more cuddling on the sofa. So this is normal, is it? She asked, relaxed and blooming under his touch.
You'll get used to it,
he said. Chapter 9. After Thanksgiving dinner, Riley checked on a few of her cleaners, but only by phone. Of course, they had clients who couldn't even wash their own dishes on a family holiday. Some people entertained on Thanksgiving, and while she found the fact that they hired help away from their own families on such an occasion somewhat tacky, it was also profitable. Riley made it profitable for her employees, too. And from what her people in the field said, all went smoothly. It was a tradition for Riley and Maddie to help June decorate the house the day after Thanksgiving. Riley dropped Maddie off at June's, then went out to run a few errands. By the time she got back to her mother's, Jock was in the garage getting out boxes for Maddie and June. I didn't expect to run into you today, she said. Isn't the store busy?
Worse than busy. I was there for a couple of hours this morning when they opened the doors to the crowd. And I'm going back later to work tonight. It'll be a zoo all weekend.
Black Friday was sale day, and nothing sold like electronics. Computers, TVs, everything from headphones to cell phones. Jock was the manager now, at least, and had a little more control over his schedule. And though she hated to have to admit it, he put in some hard weeks. She went into the house. She didn't like to look at him. He was still so good-looking that it kind of pissed her off. Couldn't he at least age badly? But he was still drawn to sports, worked out, played a little football, a little basketball, golf, and he was as fit as he'd been in high school. He still looked like the guy who'd stolen her heart and then broken it. June was in the kitchen getting out all her Christmas cookie cutters.
I didn't expect to see him here, Riley said.
I think Maddie asked him to come, June said.
Why didn't she just ask Adam?
June sighed in some aggravation.
Because Jock is her father, I suppose.
And much as it galls you, they enjoy each other.
It doesn't gall me, she lied.
What can I do?
Do you want to help go through the decoration boxes in the garage?
June asked with a sly smile.
What can I do in here?
As soon as they find it, you can put the garland up on the banister, string it with lights, and hook up the extension cords.
Fine, she said, heading for the coffee pot.
When Maddie was a baby, Jock spent time with her more often at June's house than anywhere. When he wanted to take her to his parents' house, he talked to June rather than Riley because June was more accommodating. When Maddie was in grade school, he pushed his presence more forcefully, but still cautiously. He insisted on being notified of school activities, from parent-teacher conferences to carnivals. He couldn't make them all, but he wanted to at least be told.
I'd rather not ask the teacher, Riley.
Riley most often asked her mother to let Jock know. Then there was that time when Maddie was 10 that Jock suggested to Riley that they revisit the idea of joining forces.
I think we should get together, Stu and me, maybe leading up to a date, he said. Let's get to know each other again. See if we can remember what it was that brought us together in the first place.
You've completely lost your mind, right? She said.
Not at all. I know you don't like it, but I consider you and Maddie my family. Since there's no getting around it, we could explore it.
She was appalled.
I wouldn't even consider it, she said. And why would you? You've dated a lot since Maddie was born. I don't consider you my family. Get someone else to take a chance on you.
I hardly ever date, he said. You really don't know anything about me.
I think I probably know enough, she said. Aren't you the guy who talked me out of my clothes and then dumped me?
You have a real blind spot when it comes to me, don't you, Riley? I apologized 100 times for being a stupid 18-year-old when that happened, but I really cared about you. I just got scared off, mostly by you.
And what makes you think I'd be willing to take that kind of risk again?
Maybe because I'm not 18 anymore and we have a daughter together?
Even more reason I should be cautious.
And, of course, their conversation had deteriorated from there. They often did. She'd push his buttons, she'd get pissed off all over again, and before they knew it, they were sniping at each other. So Jock married someone else, a young woman with 2 sons. The ink was barely dry on the marriage license when he was back on his own and the woman was back with her ex. And Riley felt vindicated. Jock wasn't capable of a committed relationship. Starting in junior high, Jock began to communicate directly with Maddie, and Riley would run into him at everything from car washes to softball games. And now she never knew when she'd run into him at her mother's house. On Saturday, Riley had worked for a couple of hours, and Maddie had girlfriends over for the night, so she was trapped at home. On Sunday afternoon, Maddie and June were going through the recipes and planning their Christmas baking. Riley was there by 4 o'clock to share a family dinner of Thanksgiving leftovers with them. All but Adam, who had begged off because he was busy. He told his mother he was running errands and getting his schoolwork done since he'd been out with a friend Saturday night.
Oh? Riley had asked. What friend?
He said, I don't know her, June said. It was hardly noteworthy. Adam was known to date, though circumspectly. As a rule, he didn't introduce a woman he was dating to the rest of the family until it had been weeks or months, proving they stood the test of time. Riley met Monday with some excitement, some trepidation. Emma was starting work. She'd begin her training with McKenna Rice at 7 a.m., and Riley thought McKenna might scare the life out of Emma. Riley had made a secret pledge. No arguing or fighting.
It was one thing to clear the air upon their first meeting. They had been alone in the office. But from now on, they were only employer and employee. And they'd be professional and courteous, or Emma would have to go. "It's my company," Riley kept reminding herself. Riley was at the office at 6:30, and, unsurprisingly, McKenna had beat her there. She'd already had her training manuals and supplies scattered around the boardroom. "Well, good morning," Riley said. "Getting an early start, I see."
"I don't want us to be late for our first job. That would set a bad example."
Riley laughed. "Can I get you a coffee?"
"I'm all set, thanks. I didn't start the pot in the kitchen, knowing you'd be bringing your Starbucks. I guess I'd better put on the coffee, huh? Ms. Shea might need a cup."
"I'll do it while you set up here," Riley said. McKenna was an interesting character, one of Riley's first employees. She was tiny but strong. She had spiked orange hair and dark brows, plenty of piercings on her ears and a couple of eyebrow piercings, a few colorful tattoos that had expanded over the years. The only one that showed while she wore her work uniform was a serpent that wiggled up the back of her neck. She reminded Riley of a biker chick, but she was a straight arrow. She was a single mom, like so many of Riley's employees. One 14-year-old son who towered above her already. And she was a strict mom. As far as Riley knew, Curtis didn't give her any trouble. Hell, Riley was afraid to give her trouble. All the doors between the offices and conference room were standing open, the front door unlocked, the coffee brewing. And at 6:50, Emma arrived, 10 minutes early.
Good.
She carried a tote that presumably had her drinks and lunch for the day. Her uniform was new and pristine, and she looked far too good to be cleaning houses. But that was the look Riley wanted her employees to have, because that was how her clients wanted the hired help to look.
"Good morning," Riley said.
"Good morning," Emma replied. She blushed just slightly. It was almost imperceptible, but she glanced briefly away.
Was that about the words they'd exchanged when Emma was interviewed and hired, or something else? Did Adam really have errands? Errands, my ass, Riley thought.
"How was your weekend?" Riley asked.
"Very nice, thanks. I had the best Thanksgiving. The lady I'm renting from and her girlfriends, all widows a bit beyond a certain age, had dinner and included me. It was fantastic."
"Good. What about Rosemary?"
"Didn't you know? Rosemary and her third husband, Vince, moved to Palm Springs years ago. I haven't heard a word from Lauren or Anna. I'm not even sure if they're still around here. With any luck, Rosemary and I are finished. I haven't heard from her since Richard's death."
Riley made a face.
"With any luck,"
Riley muttered under her breath. She led Emma to the conference room.
"McKenna's ready for you. McKenna, this is Emma Shea."
Emma put out her hand.
"Pleased to meet you, and thank you. I'll try to be your star pupil."
"They all say that. Get yourself a cup of coffee if you like. We're going through the handbook first. Coffee's in the kitchen."
Emma reached into her bag.
"I brought my coffee," she said, pulling out a large thermal cup.
"Save it for later. Get office coffee while you can. Meet me in here."
"Thanks," Emma said, heading for the kitchen.
Riley went to her desk.
No, surely not, Riley thought.
Surely Adam wasn't spending more than a little time with Emma. He wouldn't get romantically involved with her. Would he? Weren't they all conflicted enough without that? I will fire her, Riley thought. Emma eyed the handbook, a large spiral notebook 2.5 inches thick.
"We're going to start with some important company rules and guidelines. I have a notebook like this for you to borrow. You can make copies, take notes, memorize, whatever works best for you, and you can have it for 2 weeks. There's always a book in the office. Nick Cabrini, Director of Operations, has this book on his computer and phone.
I have one at all times, and you can stop by here or call any of us with questions. Let me put that more clearly. If you have a question, please check the book to make sure you're acting within company policy before doing anything.
Emma frowned. Like?
I'm going to tell you. McKenna flipped open the book. Nick or Riley give the estimates, and unless there are special conditions, the client contracts for our basic house or office cleaning services, which are very thorough. We'll go over the basic in a few minutes. Extra duties must be approved by Nick, and he will make a charge, so please don't quote prices to the client. Extras include things like windows, refrigerator freezer cleaning, garage cleaning, patio and outdoor furniture cleaning, cupboard clearing, laundry, special event cleanup like receptions, holiday entertaining, etc. We don't provide child care or care of the elderly or infirm. We're not plumbers. We don't unplug toilets. If they can't figure it out, we have subcontractors. Plumbers, electricians, pool service, chimney sweeps, landscapers, and gardeners, and so on. There's a very long list right here. She tapped a page in the book. It's routine for our clients to ask for more without considering the time and expense, so we have a standard. We never use the client's cleaning supplies. Only ours are approved. They've been known to come up with weird concoctions that stain, damage, or create noxious fumes. They can damage their own possessions. Likewise, you'll learn about materials and cleaning agents and will not take the homeowner's cleaning advice for your own protection. When the lady of the house says, just use a little bleach on this oriental rug, you will explain that doesn't match your instructions and offer the services of our in-house expert, Nick, who will be happy to consult before we have to buy her a new rug. And if you think clients haven't tried to dupe the poor, stupid cleaning lady into ruining something so it can be replaced for free, you're unbearably naive. For breakage, which is going to happen, we have insurance with a high deductible. The company will cover each team member for the first $50. That's the odd wine glass, ashtray, soap dish, or plate. We use only the front powder room if the need for a bathroom arises, and if there is no powder room, we'll designate an appropriate restroom in the home. We don't eat in the client's house, but a drink of bottled water, our own, is appropriate. We don't accept new or used gifts or clothing. Under any circumstances. If they want to tip you in cash, it's acceptable. Individual cleaning teams cannot offer discounts or additional work without being approved. We don't develop personal relationships with our clients. Be cheerful, helpful, and courteous. If someone wants to discuss problems, if they're not cleaning problems, explain that you're not at liberty to offer advice or act as a confidant. We have a policy that individual employees not make arrangements with clients to work on the side, and there is a non-compete agreement that you will be asked to sign that states you will not work as an independent house cleaner or maid until you've been separated from Kerrigan Services for 6 months. Our clients have an expectation of privacy and confidentiality. We understand that it is unrealistic to suggest cleaners never chat among themselves, but we do have an ironclad rule that no employee of this company discuss clients' personal matters outside of the company. It goes without saying, if you're accused of stealing, you will be investigated by the police. It has happened, and I am proud to report it has rarely been true. So, if you have any legal issues, wants, or warrants that will be complicated by a law enforcement intervention, best to say so now. She gave Emma a chance to say so. After a moment's silence, McKenna cleared her throat and went on. And if you run into burdensome issues you can't quite manage, please bring them to me, Nick, or Riley. Believe me, we've seen it all. Emma frowned. What kind of confidential things might she witness? I'm almost afraid to ask. Inside of 2 months, you won't have to ask, but I'll save you some time. Obviously, you're not going to be picking through drawers or closets, reading correspondence, diaries, or studying papers on desks. We don't look at personal papers or property. We dust it. But you're going to see things. Mrs. X, the cheapest client we have, one who has never tipped or given a holiday bonus, has a checkbook balance of $1.5 million and a monthly credit card bill over $25,000. She leaves these papers in plain sight. Very hard to miss. Mr. and Mrs. Y carelessly leave out objects of intimate pleasure. To Emma's expression of consternation, McKenna said, "Sex toys, Emma."
"Ew,"
Emma said.
"Gloves," McKenna said.
"And Mr. Z is knocking the shit out of Mrs. Z. She thinks no one knows."
"Oh my God. And you don't do anything?"
McKenna glanced down at the pages of the employee manual. "Mrs. Z said someone made an anonymous call to the police department and they were visited by someone from the domestic violence unit, but I'm sure I wouldn't know anything about that."
"So we don't get involved, even if someone's health and safety is at risk?"
"That would be one of those issues you're going to want to take to Nick and Riley." "Very important that you do so, Emma. If a member of the household we service is at risk, we're at risk. If you have reason to believe someone is breaking the law, it's important you tell your supervisor. There are examples of difficult situations in this manual." The book was compiled by Riley over years. When a new situation arises, it is not only added to the handbook. A confidential memo is also sent to team leaders so they can advise their crews. McKenna peered at Emma. "Are you going to be able to ignore the obvious? Look the other way?" Emma almost laughed. "Oh, you have no idea," she said. "It's a skill of mine." McKenna cleared her throat. "Now, let's go over some important issues. Cleaning supplies, techniques, basic chemistry so you don't mix bleach and toilet bowl cleaner and end up a 911 call." The lecture was intense and fast-paced. McKenna put all her supplies out on the table with corresponding color photos and explained how each cleaning implement was to be used and which cleaning chemicals were provided. "I don't expect you to remember all of this, Emma. You're going to be trained on the job this week. I'll be watching you and helping you. To that end, I'm taking you to some of our more challenging homes. You'll have to learn to do it well, fast, not be distracted by your chatty homeowner. Cooperate with your team and employ all the smart moves. Safety first. Don't lift anything over 40 pounds. Use your legs, not your back. We have knee pads in the van if you want them, as well as smocks and aprons. And do protect your uniform as much as possible. You're bound to get dirty, but avoid bleach marks or grease stains if you can." Then the little pixie smiled and said, "Ready?"
"Oh, God," Emma said.
"Good. Help me put this stuff away." And with that, they gathered up all of McKenna's training aides and headed out of the office, getting in the van. Two other team members, Shauna and Deli, short for Delilah, were already there and ready to roll. Shauna held a clipboard. "Okay, first house I have linens and dusting. Deli has the kitchen and hardwood floors. The newbie Emma is passing the vacuum. Do not forget the stairs. Do not slam the vacuum into walls or furniture. And it is with vengeful pleasure I give the bathrooms to McKenna." "You don't scare me," McKenna said.
"You scare me," Emma said.
"Make nice tracks with that machine, Emma," Shauna said. "The clients like the tracks. The little things keep us popular."
"Is dusting the primo job?" Emma asked.
They all laughed. "It's the least difficult," McKenna said. "But there are blinds, high shelves, ceiling fans, plants, light fixtures, wooden furniture, books. It's endless. It's hard to be fast and keep breakage down. It takes practice. The vacuum is hard, but safe."
"And the bathrooms are the worst job?"
"Sometimes, depending on the client," Shauna said. "Some of them aren't, how should we say it, clean," McKenna supplied. "Kitchens are hard. You never know what's happened in the kitchen this week. It could have been a big dinner out or a takeout week, or there could have been a lot of cooking. Greasy, splattering, nasty cooking. People with regular cleaning service get a little lazy about a thorough cleaning after cooking. They never oil their cabinets or wash the floors. I hate cleaning kitchens," Shauna said.
Then it seemed like in minutes they were there.
"Let's do it," McKenna said. And they hit the ground running.
Emma was home in her little house at 6.
She walked in and collapsed on the sofa. It wasn't until she was in that position that she realized she still wore her knee pads. The last house of the day, she got the bathrooms. 6 of them. Everyone had been thoroughly used. If possible, the sinks were the worst she'd ever seen. The family must have been the hairiest family on the planet. They were obviously descended from the Yeti. The toilets, she couldn't think about them. When she got some energy, she would call Adam. He had texted sometime after 3 that he couldn't wait to hear about her day. There hadn't been a moment yet. She went from the cleaning company's van directly to her car and straight home. Her carry pouch was empty of drinks and snacks. She was famished, and she was sure there wasn't anything left in the house from her weekend with the bottomless pit, Adam. He'd bought plenty of food to sustain them during their honeymoon, and he'd eaten all of it. There was a knock at her door. It was unrealistic to expect it was a huge takeout order. Possibly it was Penny. She lifted her head. "Please be the pizza delivery boy," she called out weakly. "How was your day, dear?" Adam. He stood over her, smiling. "Oh, God," she struggled to sit up. He was holding bags. "Oh, you brought sustenance." "Knee pads," he said, grinning like a fool. "Nice touch."
"What's in the bags?" she said, frowning at his attempt at humor.
"Food. Stuffed salmon, rice, Italian beans, bagels and muffins for the morning, milk for your coffee, a couple of sandwiches for you to take to work tomorrow."
"Oh, you are a perfect man."
"You're hungry?"
"Starving. But these hands cannot go near food. My hands have been places."
"Never mind," he said. He put his parcels on the table and went to sit on the chair facing her. "I've worked for Riley. 120 teenagers every day is like a paid vacation."
He touched the hair at her temple.
"I also brought wine."
"Can you uncork it and just pour it straight down my throat?"
"Tougher than burger hell?"
She was right. I was worked hard.
"She used to say, people have dirty lives and we clean them up." "I don't have to stay for dinner. I won't be offended."
"Oh, stay," she said. "Can I take a shower first?" He nodded.
"I'm not staying late tonight, I promise."
"What if I want you to stay late?" she asked.
"Just get your shower. I'll set up dinner."
Nothing sexier than a man who brings dinner.
"If you had a real kitchen, I'd cook you dinner, but..."
"You provided. That's everything." She struggled off the couch, but had trouble straightening. She groaned.
"Don't forget to take off the knee pads before you get in the shower," he said.
A few minutes later, when she came out of the bathroom, the table had been set, the wine uncorked, the ibuprofen bottle sitting beside one plate.
"I hope this is a casual dinner," she said, indicating her pajamas.
He held a chair for her.
"Madam?"
She took her seat and he poured her a small amount of wine. She sipped.
"Well, your sister is amazing, Adam. Her business is impressive. Complex, well thought, practical, no detail omitted. It's brilliant what she's done. I have an employee manual I can barely lift. Spent the day with a trainer," she sipped again. "I had a personal trainer in New York. I was not worked nearly as hard by him."
Adam chuckled and served their food.
"I know McKenna," he said. "She's a little demon, isn't she?"
"Depends on what you mean by demon. She's quite the handler. 5 feet of brute strength and fearsome threats. I guess Riley hired her when there were no mob bosses or biker gang enforcers available." "Where'd Riley find her?"
"I can't remember," he said. "She's been around forever. She's a fixture in the company.
Riley keeps trying to move her into a management position, and McKenna wants nothing to do with it. She likes her work, and she's good at it. She agreed to work as a supervisor and trainer, so it would be done right.
I met Nick, she said. He seems nice.
Stay on his good side,
Adam advised.
Some of the women make the mistake of thinking they can sweet-talk him. There are two people who can sweet-talk Nick, and the first is his mother.
And Riley? She asked.
You've been away from Riley too long. She doesn't sweet-talk anyone. The other, oddly enough, is McKenna, though she rarely tries. McKenna eats nails for breakfast. And she don't need no stinking man.
This morning she had me instead of the nails, she said. She sampled the salmon. Oh, Adam, I think I'm getting turned on. He laughed at her. When he was seated across from her on the green chair, she went after her dinner in earnest, trying not to gobble. I didn't make a single mistake, she finally said. I did everything right. Well, McKenna inspected my carpet tracks, my shining bathrooms, my oiled hardwood, and made a few comments. Nothing much. Clearly it was good enough. Better than good enough. Those women are workhorses.
They're good,
he agreed. McKenna indicated I was with an exceptionally good team this week, but they weren't all this good. She also said sometimes there's a weak link, but she didn't say how she knew who that was. Do they tattle on each other?
Sometimes, but that's not how they do it. They measure client complaints and watch for similarities. Then Nick and McKenna get involved with the team. Often they'll split them up and move them around. Once they figure out who's not getting the job done, they try training, counseling, observing. They almost never have to fire someone for not working. It's other